You're listening to Radio Influence.
He got him
in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The inaugural episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series took place this week, and two fighters earned a UFC contract, and I'm going to tell you who those fighters are here on this episode of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence, along with recapping what happened on the inaugural episode, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Going to talk about Gegard Mousasi exiting the UFC as he has signed with Bellator. Also, Justin Gaethje's payday for the Ultimate Fighter Season 25 finale. And there was a fighter that when I saw the payroll information, I was a little bit surprised on. Plus, we'll talk about Frank Mir, given his release from his UFC contract, and what television network will be airing the UFC 214 prelims later on this month. Plus, I'm going to have six fighter interviews. Going to be joined by Derek Campos, Joe Warren, Emily Ducote, Rafael Lovato Jr., EJ Brooks, and Casey Kinney. Of course, Campos, Warren, Ducote, Lovato Jr., and Brooks will all be fighting on Friday at Bellator 181, and Kinney will be a part of the second episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series next week. So those interviews come up here later on in this episode of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence. Of course, I am brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is a go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. It's your number one source for MMA boxing and pro wrestling video. Watch MMA wrestling and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. And that link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Fight's always got a ton of MMA action up there that you can check out. You can go right to their website. You can see the schedule of events that are going there. Also have a ton of wrestling as well. They'll have that Road FC 40 event coming up on Saturday morning, 12 a.m. Eastern time here in the United States. So be sure to check out my friends over there at Fight TV. But on Tuesday night, it was the inaugural episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, a series that I was very interested just to see what it would look like. I thought it was kind of an interesting concept. You know, pretty much it was like watching, you know, fights with the Ultimate Fighter, except there's commentary on it. I did check out the Snoopcast. I actually liked it. I saw some people on social media. Maybe it seemed kind of like 50-50 whether people liked it or not, but I liked it. I thought it was a little bit interesting, kind of interesting to see that it looked like Uriah and Snoop having a little adult cocktail, and then Snoop lighting up a joint. But it was entertaining with the commentary that Snoop Dogg did provide. So you know, if you didn't check out that, you can definitely go back and watch the Snoopcast. But a brutal knockout by Kurt Hollebutt in the main event against Matt Bissett. An excellent performance by Kurt Hollebutt, also an excellent performance by Boston Saint-Mon, who gets into the UFC with Kurt Hollebutt. They were the two fighters that were signed by Dana White following this event. You did have wins by Zhu. He got a win over Greg Rebello, a knockout in the second round. The first round of that fight was not a great fight. You know, both guys were, you know, really feeling each other out. I thought Greg did land some good strikes, but ultimately, Zhu did get the win in the second round there in that matchup. Also, you know, you had mentioning about Boston Saint-Mon got that unanimous decision win over Ricky Turcos. If you just look at the fight stats, you would think that Ricky Turcos would have won this fight, but I think ultimately it was Boston just landing the better of the strikes. Also, you had Charles Burr get a submission win against Jamie Pickett there with 5 seconds left there in the opening round. And also, you had Joey Sanchez get a win over Manny Vasquez. Manny Vasquez got off to a good start in that fight, had a good first round. I thought he won the first round, but ultimately Joey Sanchez took over there in the second and third round. This was actually the first time that Manny Vasquez has dropped down to 125 pounds. His fight in Bellator most recently was a catch weight of 130 pounds. And, you know, interesting to see what Manny Vasquez looks like as he gets some more flyweight matchups in there. Charles Byrd, I think, could be, you know, someone you definitely look at to be in the UFC at some point. You know, I thought Jamie Pickett got off to a good start. I mean, and, you know, kudos to Jamie Pickett. You know, he takes his fight on 6 days' notice. He has to drop 24 pounds. He weighed 200. He told me last week he was weighing 210 pounds. And I can tell you the interview I actually did with him last week, the video interview I did, he was actually going through his medicals, going through his eye test. So kind of, you know, a little bit a unique interview for myself, interviewing Jamie Pickett there. And we'll see if he does get a medical suspension. He was scheduled to fight next week at the Valor and Conflict show. So we'll see if that fight ultimately does take place. Jamie Pickett was scheduled to have a rematch against Doug Usher. He won the first fight against Doug, but there was a little heat there between those two guys, so we'll see what happens there. And I think Charles Byrd is definitely be a guy that, you know, if you want to follow any MMA manager in terms of what they're saying, you might want to follow Daniel Rubenstein, who represents a lot of fighters. He mentioned on Twitter on Tuesday that UFC actually has a 30-day clause to where they can sign these fighters. And, you know, one of the things, and I know people have mentioned this, and you know, a lot of people have asked me, because I've said, hey, these guys are making good money by going on this show. And what the pay is $5,000 a show, $5,000 a win. And all the honest part about this is the fact of, you know, a fighter's not going to find that kind of money on the regional scene. Maybe you can go to Russia and make that kind of money. But here in the United States, there's not really regional promoters that are paying that kind of a rate, a show, and a win bonus. So, you know, congratulations to Kurt Hallebaut and Boston Saint-Mon, both represented, by the way, by Sucker Punch Entertainment. A good night for Sucker Punch. They did have one other fight in his card. That was Manny Vasquez, who, you know, got off to a good start, but ultimately could not get the win. But overall, I enjoyed this fight card. You know, but obviously the Kurt Hallebaut is really the story of that fight card. It just, you know, look, Matt Bissett went out on a shield, and, you know, Matt's a guy that I don't think Matt can have a boring fight. You know, he goes out there, you know, and just puts on a fight, and he did that against Kurt Hallebaut. But Kurt Hallebaut just dynamic striking, brutal knockout there by Kurt Hallebaut, a guy that I remember when I talked to him, you know, late last year when he had told me that he was moving up to lightweight after featherweight, and pretty much it said to me that he thought that his days at 145 pounds are over. But you get this opportunity, the chance to get back into the UFC, it'll be interesting to see, does he stay at 145 or does he go up to 155 pounds? And, you know, this Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, you've got me. You know, it's definitely, I like the pacing of the fights. You know, hey, look, living on the East Coast, I live here in Florida, at 8 p.m. Eastern time start time is ideal for me. And really, there's no filler times. You know, there's basically about, you know, 2-3 minutes between fights where all they're doing is showing a video package previewing those fights. I would hope that the UFC maybe uses those video packages, you know, 6 and 7 days leading up to those fights to get people interested. But, you know, one thing I've always heard is that when it comes to Fight Pass, they understand that live content is king, of course. Their next episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series will be next Tuesday. And, of course, you're going to hear from Casey Kennedy later on in the podcast to talk about his fight against CJ Hamilton. Of course, CJ has been the Valor Fights flyweight champion. So, you know, overall, a good night of fights on Tuesday night with the five fights that I did watch there on UFC Fight Pass. But really the big news item going on in MMA this week, as it was revealed on Monday, as Gegard Mousasi has signed a 6-fight deal with Bellator MMA, another top UFC fighter bolting the promotion. And as I tweeted on Monday, it is just, it's absolutely amazing to me to see the amount of fighters that have left the UFC since WME IMG took over. And it just, you sit back and you say, what are they doing? Why are you letting a Gegard Mousasi go? Now, look, I don't know how much Bellator gave them, but this is something I have talked about for a while now, what Bellator is doing. They are not, when they are signing these big free agents, they're not going out there and giving them the typical, you know, X amount of money to show and X amount of money to win. No, they're giving them a flat fee. You know, Rory McDonald, for instance, you know, it came out that, you know, he's making $400,000 a fight. You know, the UFC, I think that they didn't think that Gegard Mousasi was a draw, but you're still talking about one of the best middleweights in the world, and you know, he can fight at 205 pounds, so there's a lot of interesting matchup there for him in Bellator. I think one of the matchups that really no one is talking about is a potential matchup between Gegard Mousasi and Alexander Shlemenko, hashtag would watch. There's a lot of hashtags would watch with Gegard Mousasi in Bellator. There's a ton of fights that would definitely be interested to watch him fight. I thought, I had one of my followers on Twitter say, tweeted me something on Monday that I thought was very interesting. And I think, I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with what they said, but I think it's an interesting debate. And the tweet was along the lines of, you know, Bellator could make a case that they have the best 170-pound fighter in the world and they have the best 185-pound fighter in the world, you know. And I think that, you know, maybe you have a little bit there's debate you can have on both Mousasi and Rory McDonald. Personally, I would not call either one of those the best 170 or 185-pound fighter in the world. Are they both top three, top four in their division? No question. But it's just, to me, it's so interesting. And look, this is a awesome signing for Bellator. And you know, when you look at everything that has gone on with the UFC over the last year, and just, you know, all the various situations, I don't need to go down of why UFC fighters are unhappy, but at the end of the day, you know, there's another organization out there that is willing to pay fighters a big salary for them to come in. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the key is going to be, is can Bellator make a profit off those fighters? I think that it'll be interesting to see, you know, where they put Gegard Mousasi's first fight. To me, I would put him immediately into a title matchup. I know that the expectations are for Rafael Carvalho to defend the Bellator middleweight title in December against Alessio Sakara. But if I was Bellator, I would scrap those plans now, and then I would give Mousasi Emili, or maybe you give Mousasi Alexander Shlemenko. I mean, to me, 185 is not a deep division for Bellator. It's a division they're trying to develop. I think there's some guys on the horizon. I think you can look at John Salter, who fights on Friday night against Kendall Grove. I think you look at Chris Honeycutt at 185. I mean, this guy fought at 170, but really that cut down to 170 took so much out of him. I think he's a much better fighter at 185 pounds, but it's an awesome signing for Bellator. It's another great signing. And it's just, to me, it's so baffling of the UFC just letting elite fighters walk away. And it's one of those things that at the end of the day, it's just a head scratcher of why you're letting Bellator build up this roster. And it'll be interesting to kind of see. You know, I had someone, you know, one of my buddies text me on Monday and said, he's like, what do you think the UFC's mindset is in just letting, you know, top fighters walk away? And I think the only thing I can come up with is maybe they think that, hey, we're going to let Bellator go out and shell out all this money for fighters and to hope to bankrupt them. And I don't agree with that thought process. I mean, I will say this. I was surprised that Gegard Mousasi left the UFC. You know, the UFC had since his last fight back there at UFC 210, had done a lot of stuff with Gegard in terms of promotional materials, but ultimately they just decided that, nope, they're not going to go that route. And it's amazing to me. And it's interesting to kind of see some of the matchups that will happen with Gegard Mousasi. And, you know, look, at the end of the day, it's awesome for Gegard to go out there and get the payday that he is getting. And it's great for, you know, it's great for the MMA industry that there is someone out there that can go out there and get the talent. You know, I think one of the things that I would hope to see out of Bellator, and Bellator, look, has done a great job of acquiring talent is, can they go out and, you know, acquire, you know, talent on the regional scene? You know, they're, you know, look, like a guy that I've had on this podcast multiple times before, Eric Anders, you know, won his Bellator debut in 23 seconds in unaired prelim. And Eric was on this podcast, and I asked him, I said, hey, what's going on with Bellator? And he basically said, they really haven't shown any interest. And Eric Anders now has gone 2-0 since exiting Bellator, remained undefeated, and just became the LFA middleweight champion. So, which, you know, that's one of those things. But Bellator, man, I tell you, they're doing a lot of great things. And, I mean, their card on Friday night is an unbelievable fight card. You know, it's a solid main card. I think the preliminary card is a tremendous preliminary card for them, which, you know, look, that was the criticism when they announced Bellator NYC was, what would Bellator 181 look like in Bellator 182? And they have done absolutely a tremendous job with them, and be interesting to kind of see, you know, who is the next major free agent to head to Bellator. Could it be Joe Duffy? I don't, someone asked me about that the other day, and I said, I don't see Bellator overpaying for Joe Duffy, but that would be a very quality addition to the Bellator lightweight roster. They were unable to get Justin Gaethje, and of course it was revealed that Justin Gaethje made $200,000 on Friday night in the disclosed salary, $100,000 a show, $100,000 a win. In terms of what surprised me about those salaries was that Jared Cannonier made $100,000, $50,000 to show, $50,000 to win. That was something that definitely caught me off guard. Did not necessarily see that one coming, especially since that was only his fifth fight in Bellator. And by the way, speaking of The Ultimate Fighter Season 25, in terms of the television ratings, the main card averaged 724,000 viewers and peaked at 849,000 viewers between 10:45 and 11 p.m. So that actually was not during the main event. The preliminary card averaged 453,000 viewers. The post-fight show had 230,000 viewers, and the pre-fight show had 130,000 viewers. And of course, on Saturday, UFC 213, which of course took that hit, the preliminary card was not a great viewership. 657,000 viewers. And peaked at 732,000 viewers during the Travis Brown and Alexei Oleinik fight. Of course, you know, they did go up against some tough competition on Saturday night. NASCAR and NBC Sports drew 2.7 million viewers. MLB on Fox had 2.5 million viewers. And the Summer League game between the Lakers and the Celtics had 1.106 million viewers. So, you know, and obviously UFC 213 was, you know, obviously took a little bit of damage. But I will tell you this, and I talked about this on the post-fight show. You know, I went to the same bar to watch UFC 213 as I went to watch UFC 212 app. And the crowd was much better for UFC 213 than UFC 212. I don't know how much of that had to do with the fact that it was July, you know, July 4th weekend, and maybe a lot of people were on vacation and whatnot. But I just thought it was pretty interesting to see that. But, you know, interesting, you know, in terms of television viewership there. You know, it'll be interesting to see what Bellator does on Friday night. But to kind of circle back on Gegard Mousasi, I mean, look, it is, at the end of the day, that is a tremendous signing by Bellator. And they are taking advantage of all the just unusual decisions that are being made by the UFC at this point. And, you know, it's one of those things that you sit back and you just go, what is the UFC doing? And I think that if you are a 105-pound fighter in the UFC, you just kind of have to wonder, like, why are they just letting a guy walk away? But, you know, look, I was not in those contract negotiations. I don't know what Gegard Mousasi was offering, but, you know, when you listen to him on Ariel Helwani's show, it just kind of sounded like, you know, his mind was pretty made up that he was going to go to Bellator, you know, unless the UFC really just came in with a great offer. I mean, look, of course, you know, the Reebok deal is going to come up and get mentioned, and, you know, you understand, you know, why that gets mentioned. But, you know, I think the interesting thing to learn would be is when Gegard Mousasi has his first fight in Bellator, How much money does he get in sponsorship pay? But it was interesting to hear him talk about the fact that he doesn't want to plaster his shorts with the logo. He kind of wants to just be with one company to where, you know, they really get behind his brand. So we'll see if that does happen for them. Now, some other news and notes to mention. Frank Mir, the former UFC heavyweight champion, he announced last week that he has been released from his UFC contract. Of course, he is still under USADA suspension. April 2018 is, I believe, when he comes off that suspension. And, you know, he wants to fight. I think there's a lot of options I think you could look at. Obviously, people are going to mention Bellator. I think you have to look at ACB. You have to look at Ryzen. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, because ever since USADA came into the UFC, I think one of the questions that's always been out there is if a fighter gets suspended by USADA and then they end up being released by the UFC while they're on suspension, what happens if a United States promotion tries to promote a fight with that fighter? You know, one of the things about USADA is, you know, they're not a part of the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports, so technically, a commission doesn't have to honor that suspension. So it'll be interesting to see if Frank Mir does try to fight in the United States. Of course, it's not been a great run for Frank Mir in his past couple of fights. And, you know, yes, he is heavyweight, and heavyweights do tend to, have great success in their late 30s. You know, he's 38 years old, just turned 38. Back in May, but it's not been a great run for Frank Mir. And look, I'm a big Frank Mir fan, but you know, you look at the, you know, since 2012, he only has two wins. You know, and those two wins have come against Antonio Silva and Todd Duffy. Losses against Junior Dos Santos, Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, Alistair Overeem, Andrei Arlovsky, and Mark Hunt. Of course, coming off that knockout against Mark Hunt back in March of last year. Prior to that, he had that loss against Arlovsky, which was not a very good fight. And then, of course, he had the two knockouts prior to that. So, obviously, you know, he's mentioned about the Fedor fight. And, you know, we'll see if that's a fight that at some point, if that does come together. And I would seem to think that Bellator probably would not try to put together a fight with Frank Mir while he's under suspension with USADA, but I don't know, maybe they would. So it'd be interesting to kind of see how that does play out. Now, at the end of this month, it is UFC 214. Of course, we all saw that promo that was on the UFC 213 pay-per-view, which was just awesome. Awesome promo that was done, and the fight card lineup was revealed by the UFC this week. And the big note is the fact of the television prelims will be on FXX. And late last week, I had learned this, and I'd asked a Fox Sports representative. I said, hey, is this true? And they said yes, that it is going to be on FXX, and told me that more details would be revealed in the coming weeks. And, you know, and I'm guessing, this is just my guess, is that probably on that night they probably have baseball on FS1, and maybe there's like NASCAR or something else. Just kind of shows you where the UFC kind of fits in a totem pole in terms of Fox Sports. But it will be a 5-fight main card. Of course, 3 title fights. Daniel Cormier defending the UFC light heavyweight title against John Jones. Tyron Woodley defending the welterweight title against Damian Maia, and Chris Cyborg and Tanya Evinger fighting for the vacant women's featherweight title. The other two fights that will be on the main card on pay-per-view, Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone and Jimmy Manoa versus Volkan Oezdemir. Of course, those are big matchups in the welterweight division and light heavyweight divisions, respectively. In terms of your TV prelims, Ricardo Lamas, Jason Knight will be the featured prelim. Awesome matchup there. Also, you have Aljamain Sterling, Hinnan Burrell going to be on that fight card. Also, Renato Macana against Brian Ortega, and Andre Filia against an opponent to be determined, of course, was supposed to take on Duho Choi. The feature prelim on UFC Fight Pass will be Sage Northcutt versus John McDessie, which to me is a little bit of an odd match. I'm actually going to try to get John here on the podcast leading up to that fight to talk about that matchup. Of course, he took that fight on relative short notice. In terms of that fight card, Josh Borkman's going to be on that fight card against Drew Dober, which, of course, you remember his last fight kind of talked about. The end of the road coming for him. So I'm really pumped up for UFC 214. I cannot wait for that fight card to get here. And as I said on the pre-fight show, can we just like bubble wrap Daniel Cormier and John Jones and make sure they make it there to that fight card. Speaking of fight card lineups, the UFC also did reveal the fight card lineup for the Fox card that is coming up next Saturday night. Weidman versus Gastelum. As your four-fight main card will be Weidman, Gastelum, Bermudez, Elkins, Cummings, Vellante, and Rivera and Almeida. Now, coming up next week on the podcast, scheduled to be joined by Kyle Bochniak, who is going to be taking on Jeremy Kennedy. Also, Marlon Vera, trying to get him on the podcast as well to talk about his fight and working on a couple other UFC on Fox 25 interviews as well. So look out for that coming up next week. But, you know, a decent, you know, Fox car coming up next Saturday night. And we'll see if Chris Weidman can turn it around against Kelvin Gastelum. I mean, look, Kelvin Gastelum gets a win. All of a sudden, you know, he's a top five guy there at 185 pounds. You know, the question really, I think, with Kelvin Gastelum is, does he ultimately decide to stay at 185, or does he try to convince the UFC to let him drop down to 170 pounds again, even after all the issues that he has had? Now, in terms of MMA this week, and of course on Friday, we have Bellator 181. And then on Sunday, we have UFC Fight Night 113. Of course, coming up on Friday, Daniel Galvan and I will have a preview podcast for both of those fight cards. Also coming up this weekend on Friday, you have LFA 16. That has seen a change in the main event. Andrea Lee was supposed to defend her title. Her opponent fell out, so she is no longer on that fight card. Of course, that'll be on Access. Road FC 40, which is a fight card I mentioned a little earlier on the podcast, that'll be on Fight TV. That'll start at midnight on Saturday night, Friday night, however you want to look at that Eastern time zone. So those are some of the fight cards that are taking place this weekend. So you can definitely check out some of those fight cards that are going on maybe in your area. Actually, next Friday night, there's a local card here in Tampa, so I'm going to go out to that and check out those local fights. Always like to, you know, when I have the chance to go out there and support local MMA, because really that's a you know, that's the key thing. I always sit there and say, hey, you got to go out and support local MMA, and I try to do the same thing as well. Sit there, buy some tickets, and, you know, watch some of these guys that are working up their ways through those regional scenes. So we'll see. We'll be looking forward to that. I'll tweet out some pictures when I head out to those RFC fights next week. But, of course, coming up on Friday, it is Bellator 181. And my first guest here on the podcast this week is one of the men that's going to be in the main event of this fight card. Of course, last week on the podcast, we had Brandon Gertz. And Brandon Gertz revealed the fact of Derek Campos wanted this to be a catchweight bout of 165 pounds. Ultimately, they end up agreeing to a catchweight bout of 158 pounds, which, you know, kind of weird that the guy that was already scheduled to be on this fight card asked for a catchweight bout when the guy who was stepping in wasn't asking for that catchweight bout. But I did have a chance to catch up with Derek Campos and just simply start off my interview by asking Derek, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. Now, when I talked to Brandon, he said something to me that I thought was very interesting. He said that this is a catchweight bout of 158 pounds and that you actually wanted this to be a 165-pound weight class catchweight bout. If that is true, why did you want a 165-pound catchweight bout?
Yeah, initially at first I asked for 165, 160 pounds, just because I had some medical issues going on with my body, but I got them taken care of with my doctor. But for the most part, I just wanted to want to try and be easy on my body as far as taking out any water from it. That was really my reason for asking for a catch weight, and they pushed for 158, even though I went to ask for 160. And, you know, I said that was fine. You know, but it worked. It worked out in the end for me. But yeah, the main reason was just like a small medical issue with myself that I felt like maybe if I could just avoid having to cut water weight from my body, it'd be a little healthier for me.
Was there ever a consideration due to this medical issue just not to fight on this card?
No, I was, I was going to push, you know, do what I need to do, push through. But I figured, you know, it wouldn't hurt to ask, you know, especially since, you know, nowadays they're kind of talking about the possibility of maybe doing different weight classes in MMA. And you know, if maybe we could do catch weight, it'd be a good, you know, it'd be a good representation, you know, it'd be, you know, showcase it.
One of those weight classes is 165 that has been talked about. Is that, would that be the ideal weight class for you?
Yeah, actually, I mean, because honestly, like right now, I'm 164, 165. So I mean, I would have like, physically, I feel great. I'm healed up, you know. It wouldn't be an issue for me to cut to 55-56 right now, today, but given the fact that, you know, it is somewhat healthier to not have to dehydrate the body, you know, 165 would be perfect, yes. But, I mean, until that day happens, you know, I'll keep fighting at 155.
And you entered this fight with three wins in a row. Of course, the last loss was at in the rematch against Brandon Gertz. Was not a long fight. So, you know, after you had those back-to-back losses against Chandler and Gertz, did you have to go back to the drawing board at all?
Yeah, I had to go back to the drawing board. I had to really get right in my mind and figure out what I did wrong and where I stood as a fighter. And, you know, I feel like with that opportunity against Gallard, I really, it just lit a fire under me. And I'm just keeping that fire going.
And of course, you're coming off that win back in January against Derek Anderson. And I talked to Brandon about, you know, this fight and it being a trilogy matchup. Did you always kind of feel like that it was inevitable that you guys were going to meet for a third time?
Honestly, I didn't. I really didn't expect to meet him a third time, you know. Especially since he's on a 2-fight losing streak. I figured they would match him up with somebody else. But they ended up offering him to me. And so, of course, I'm going to jump at the chance to avenge a loss, especially that kind of loss. But yeah, for sure, I didn't expect it. But since it's here, I'm going to take full advantage of it.
When you get the phone call that, you know, you're not going to face Patricky anymore on this card and that you end up learning that he's being moved to another card to take on Benson Henderson, what was your initial reaction?
I was definitely a little, you know, frustrated because I wanted to also get that match against Patricky back. But at the same time, I believe in the promotion. I believe in what Belter is doing you know, as far as the fights that they make happen. And so, you know, my whole deal is I go with the flow. You know, I trust what the promotion is doing. At the end of the day, they want me to fight somebody. I'm going to do it and go in there and take care of business and showcase what I can do.
Obviously, as time goes on, you're always evolving as a fighter. You know how you have evolved as a fighter over the years. But how have you seen Brandon evolve over the years? Do you kind of feel like you're facing a very similar guy to you know, the first time you met him when you got the win there?
Yeah, I'm not a big trash talker. I mean, I let my hands do the talking. But honestly, I feel like Gertz is still the same fighter. You know, he still has those looping punches, big power punches. He's still a powerful wrestler. He has the same stance. He has everything to me seems the same. So, I mean, come next Friday, it's going to be my job to quickly assess the situation, see what he's got new to throw at me, and figure him out from there.
What do you think he does the best?
I think he's just real explosive. I think that's that is where he's real good. When he explodes and he comes at you, exactly how he caught me the last time, that's his thing, is being real explosive. But at the same time, it is also his weakness because he can really tire himself out. He's like a, you know, a loaded gun, and he just fires off and then that's it, you know. So it's his advantage to be explosive like he is and powerful, but at the same time, it's his disadvantage.
Generally speaking, how do you take away the explosiveness of your opponent? Is it just basically trying to be the guy that's always pushing forward? Is that the easiest way to kind of describe it?
I would describe it like that. Be the aggressor, be the one pushing forward, but also at the same time, without blowing, your load, like without me blowing my energy, fight smart, fight fast, and just outwork him, but from a technical aspect as well as a physical aspect.
Now, when you say fight smart, what does fighting smart mean to you?
Fighting smart is, using the right angles, using the right combinations, seeing when his will is breaking and pushing further to break him even more until he completely breaks.
And in terms of how you get the victory in this matchup, do you just visualize it all going down the same way? I know this is a short notice fight in terms of preparing for Brandon, but have you visualized it going down a certain way?
Absolutely. I envision it going down, different ways every day, whether I'm in the gym doing my strength and conditioning, whether I'm on the mat rolling, whether I'm running, outside getting my miles in, I envision knocking him out. I envision choking him out. I envision everything, every possible way I can win against him. I envision it. And, that's what I plan on doing come next Friday.
And a victory will give you four in a row here. So where do you think that puts you? Where does that put you in the lightweight title picture? I mean, do you think you're basically right there? I mean, where do you, and if you're being realistic, I mean, do you think that, maybe it's one more fight after that and potentially you're looking at a title shot?
Yeah, I feel like with this fight, it definitely seals the book on Gertz and keeps me moving forward to continue to fight the top guys in the division. And ultimately, I would like to see, God willing, I'm the winner of this fight. I would like to see the winner of Pitbull and Henderson. I would like to face one of those two guys. And if I don't get one of those two guys, then, the likes of Piccolotti, I would love to face, or Steve Corvallo. Just the top guys in the division. That way, I keep my momentum going. I keep winning. And two, three more fights, however many, I don't care. As long as when I get to a title shot, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that I deserve it.
But first up is Bellator 181 coming on Friday night, July the 14th, live on Spike, as we'll see Derek take on Brandon Gertz in their trilogy matchup. Derek, as always, I appreciate time, and let my listeners know where they can follow you at on social media.
Everybody can follow me, on DC3StallionMMA88 on Instagram and DC3Stallion for Twitter, and of course, you can find me on Facebook. Going to create a fighter page on there, and so like it when I do, and just keep joining me for the ride.
And there you have my conversation with Derek Campos. I appreciate Derek coming on the podcast to talk about his trilogy matchup against Brandon Gertz in the main event of Bellator 181 on Friday night. A big matchup there in the lightweight division. Brandon Gertz, of course, we had on this podcast last week, looking to snap a two-fight winning streak, and we'll see how Derek Campos can do here. Can he go up 2-1 in this trilogy matchup here? As, of course, they have split the first two meetings, and you hear Derek's reasons for why he wanted a catchweight matchup, which is something that Brandon Gertz talked about last week on the podcast, where initially he wanted Derek wanted a 165-pound catchweight, and Brandon said, no way in hell is that happening. And now Derek Campos and Brandon Gertz will fight at 158 pounds, a very big matchup there in the 155-pound division. Now, this main card on Spike will also see a big matchup in the bantamweight division, as former Bellator featherweight and bantamweight champion Joe Warren returns to the Bellator cage. He is going to take on Steve Garcia, a very kind of old-school type MMA matchup here, where you've got the veteran and Joe Warren taking on the young guy in Steve Garcia. I did have a chance to catch up with Joe Warren late last week to talk to him about this matchup, and just simply started off our conversation by asking Joe how he was doing.
Good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on, and you know, when I think about your fight coming up here, and I'm sure that this type of question has probably been asked you a lot leading up to this fight, but do you at all feel that people have kind of written you off, underestimating you, you know, going into this fight?
Yeah, you know, everybody, they always write you off when you lose. You're only as good as your last fight, you know, but this is a very comfortable situation for me. I've won 3 belts in Bellator. You know, I'm a Bellator family, man. I've been with Bellator forever. So, you know, this is just the first step. I don't even know this guy's name, really, that I'm fighting here. He's just a body they're putting in front of me for me to beat the pants off this dude so I can move back and get my belt back, get an opportunity to beat the hell out of Dantes again.
It's one of those matchups where it's kind of like it seems like this is what promoters love to do. The guy that's been around for a long time, that up-and-coming prospect. I mean, do you all take that kind of as a slide of maybe that this kid is trying to make a name off you?
Listen, the way people make names are they beat people like me, okay? You got to beat the baddest man to be able to get your name out there, okay? And that's kind of what I am. You know, I started this bantamweight division at Bellator. I plan on finishing it. And the bottom line is, you know, I'm like a gatekeeper for Bellator. You know, if you want your name to be known in Bellator at bantamweight, you got to come through me. And I'm very, you know, it's a very comfortable situation for me. You know, I'm not happy to be starting all over again, but that's what happens, you know, in MMA. It's an unpredictable sport, you know. So I could have a belt right now, but I lost my last fight. And so now I'm back into line again. So I'll beat the pants off of this dude, and then I'm coming to get my opportunity for that, to get my belt back, to beat the hell out of Dantes again. You know, there's a rubber match there that I want. He caught me when I was fighting, you know, not training for him. I was training for, you know, just to win fights. And, you know, you're only as good as the evolution of the sport if you get better. And this old man figured out some footwork, so people are in big trouble.
Gatekeeper is a term that it's something we hear in MMA all the time, but I kind of feel like it's not a term that you want to go be known as. I mean, does that term bother you at all?
No, I don't give a shit. You know, the bottom line is, you know, we have a young studs coming up, and if you want to get a name, you always have to beat a name. You know how it goes. And, yeah, you can look at it as a bad thing or not, but, you know, that's kind of what happens. You know, everybody that comes into Bellator that wants to get an opportunity to get a belt, they usually have to come through me, you know? So it's a comfortable situation for me. You know, I'm not really worried about it. You know, this is just a body for me to crush through so that we can be back in this, this title hunt.
2016 wasn't the greatest of years for you in terms of win losses. So how would you describe 2016?
Yeah, you know how it goes. It's the most unpredictable thing you can do in the world is get into that cage. You know, you can think you're the best in the world or you're the best prepared, and things happen. You know, I mean, I had a belt and got caught in a knee bar, you know, and it was terrible. You know, should have had a rematch right away and had to fight 4 matches back to get that rematch. I mean, to get my belt back, and then lost, you know, I lost against Caldwell. It was my first time I got injured. First takedown, I dislocated my kneecap and tore my MCL, you know, so there's nothing I could do. I was stuck on the ground, you know, and so that sucks, but you take that one out of there. I lost to a tough opponent. Dantes, you know, he's probably one of the best in the business right now, period. And, you know, he caught me. You know, I got him the first time. He got me the second time. If I got to go to Brazil and go to the, you know, go to his second job, the Brazilian steakhouse, and put up my green flag to whoop that dude's ass again, I will. You know, and, you know, this is just this guy I'm fighting right now. I don't even remember his fucking name. You know, he's a tough up-and-coming kid. This is very normal for me. You know, if I had a problem with that, I probably wouldn't be fighting anymore. You know, I mean, this sport is a bunch of young studs, and they're looking to get their opportunity to become a big name in these organizations, and they have to beat a big name. So good luck. Hope that dude has some insurance, because I'm going to wreck shop this week.
And his name is Steve Garcia, for the fans that want to know what his name is. But have you even watched any film with him, or is that just something that you have Mark do?
Yeah, Mark does all my film watching. You know, early in our career, I think Mark didn't want me to watch films because the guys I was fighting were technically so sound, they were scary to watch, you know. But me, you know, I'm used to being at this at a top level of competition. I know he's undefeated, or I don't even know. I know he's a young kid coming from Greg's camp, so he's prepared. But that being said, you can only be so prepared before you get in the cage with the baddest man. And I plan on performing, impressing myself, and getting it and moving straight through this man.
You mentioned about footwork earlier, and that you now have footwork. Is that just something that, as time has evolved, that you and Mark have just been working on, you know, for the past couple of years, and now it's something that's clicked, and all of a sudden now it's coming together?
No. You know, the bottom line is I'm a wrestler. I was pretty flat footed. Didn't move a lot, attacked your body, and took you down. And Don says after I beat him and stole his belt, he worked. He worked for 3-4 years on just perfecting to beat me. I was fighting other men. I was not worried about what that person was. Got an opportunity, short notice, 2 months, and we fought him, and he caught me. You know, he beat me. You know, and, what happened to us is you can cry and retire, or you can reinvent yourself. That's what this sport's all about. You get left behind if you don't keep evolving in this sport, MMA. And so we just hit the we watched some tapes. We went right back to the drawing board, and we switched the game up again. So now I'm a new fighter. I'm moving better. I have fast feet, fast hands. And so that's what we worked these last 8 months, was how to not get caught into a firefight with footwork. So I just believe that I've evolved as a fighter again. This is the most dangerous place you could have me, is off a loss. You can look at records. You know, I always come back. I've won 3 belts before. I understand what this road is, and I embrace it.
You talked about this being a familiar situation. It's also a very familiar venue for you, the Windstar World Casino. Are you a superstitious guy at all? Will you have the same type of routine just because you've been in this venue so many times?
Yeah, you know, it's not a very big venue, but I love fighting there. They have great fans. They love having me there. I fought there so many times, 6 times, won belts there, lost belts there, been submitted there, submitted people there. There's nothing that hasn't happened to me in that arena. And so it's a very comfortable situation again. You know, I'm back trying to fight to get that belt back again. They bring me back to the Windstar World Casino, where I get an opportunity to perform in front of the crowd that loves me so much. It's just, I'm not a superstitious guy. I'm a realist. I understand fighting, understand what it means to get into that cage, understand how much weighs on that win for me. So it's just kind of anxious right now, ready to get there, weigh in, and kick the shit out of this guy.
I've been there. It's a huge casino. If you park on the wrong side and you're trying to get to the hotel part, you're going to be walking for a long time. I made that mistake the first time
I
went there.
And they're building a big venue now, a big arena there too.
Yeah, and a lot of people go there. But how do you see the victory come for you here? I mean, do you see this as, you're just going to overwhelm Steve Garcia and this fight's not making it out of the first round?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I see every fight now. You know, I see myself as a finisher. I'm a wrestler. Bottom line, I'm not going to run from that anymore. You know, I'm going to win fights by using my hands to get to this guy's body, put him on the ground, and try to finish him with some elbows. Being a realist like I am, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So if I revert back to what I'm great at wrestling, I believe I can dominate him there. If he wants to stand up and test this new footwork, then I'll be standing right in front of him ready for that also. So I'm not a very good prediction guy, but I know I'm going to be leaving that cage with my hand up.
You mentioned about being a realist. Is it realistic in your mind that a victory here gets you another fight with Dantas?
You know what? I hope so, but no. You know, they didn't even give me a rematch. I'm a Bellator family man. I've been there since the beginning. Scott Coker's always said he'd take care of me. You know, so it just see what happens here. You know, the Dantes is a fight that is a rubber match that I'd like to have. You know, we both have a win there. I see me having to go through Caldwell. But you know, we didn't even get to that fight didn't even really happen. You know, I got hurt right away. He's a great competitor, but I'll beat the pants off that kid too. These young studs, you know, they can, you better watch who you're talking to. They better watch what they're saying. You know, you think this old man might, you think that my age is a problem. You better be open-minded to watch this old man come around the corner and beat your ass. And that's what is going to happen. So I'm, you know, re-energized, invigorated, ready for war. This is the most dangerous place you have me. Super confident and excited. So I'm just looking forward to impressing myself next Friday.
Joe, as always, I really appreciate your time. Of course, I'm very familiar with the podcast, but for my listeners that maybe are not familiar with your podcast, let them know what it is and where they can listen to it at.
Yeah. Make sure you tune in to Podcast One. We're on Podcast One. We're the only other MMA podcast. Chael Sonnen has one. And we are Sean Funky and the Baddest Man on Podcast One. Tune in and hear us and listen. We always have some fun stuff to talk about. And we always talk about Bellator. So all you Bellator Nation, make sure you tune in. Sean Funky and the Baddest Man on Podcast One.
And that was my conversation with the self-proclaimed baddest man on the planet, Joe Warren. I appreciate Joe coming on the podcast. I preview his fight coming up on Friday night at Bellator 181 live on Spike as he takes on Steve Garcia, veteran against the young gun. See if the veteran can hold off the young gun, or maybe will it be the young gun that makes his rise up the Bellator bantamweight division, which, look, it is not the deepest of divisions, but this is a key matchup at 135 pounds. If Joe Warren gets a win, I think it probably puts him into a number one contenders type fight. And I think a matchup against Michael McDonald would make all the sense in the world for Joe Warren if he gets a win. But first up, he has got to get past Steve Garcia. Now, this main card was supposed to see a women's flyweight matchup between our next guest, Emily Ducote, and Valerie Letourneau. However, Valerie Letourneau pulled out of the fight this week, and now Emily Ducote is going to take on Jessica Middleton. Now, I talked to Emily Ducote prior to the change, so I'm going to play the interview. Some of the interview was about her fight against Valerie Letourneau, but still wanted to play the interview that I did here with Emily Ducote, and simply just started off by asking how things were going.
It's going good. How are you doing?
Very good. When I think about this fight, to me, it's kind of a familiar situation for you. You know, in two of your four Bellator fights, there has been a betting line. You have been the underdog. While the betting lines are not out as we're talking, all expectations are that you once again be the betting underdog. Does that all motivate you at all? Does it give you anything extra? I mean, or do you just love that role?
Yeah, honestly, my team and myself, we really don't care because, like you said, in my fights, I am the underdog. And so we actually, you know, we like it. We just kind of like to train, get our camp sharp and ready, and we show up fight day. We don't really pay too much attention to, you know, the betting lines or stuff like that, but it does not affect us whatsoever. We don't mind. We just like to show up fight day.
It's been a long camp. I believe that this is going to be a 10-week camp for you. So what are the pros and cons of having that long of a camp to prepare for a certain fighter?
Right. Yes, it is my longest camp. You know, 10 weeks is a long time. I knew in the beginning that it was going to fly by. And, you know, looking back now, less than 2 weeks ago, it really did fly by. So, you know, some camps go by slower, some go by fast. This one flew by. I'm just very excited to fight pretty soon here. We just used all the time. It was more of like a opportunity to have extra time is how we were looking at it this camp. So everything will be sharp and ready to go. And that's kind of how we were looking at it, just using all the time.
when you have that long of a time, how do you prepare it in making sure that you're peaking, you know, on fight week? I mean, is it one of those things where you have to listen to your body throughout the camp and make sure that you're not, you know, tearing your body, you know, apart before you actually get to the fight night?
Right. Yeah. So since I've never had such a long camp, I really had to listen to my coach. He plans everything, you know, perfectly so that we peak at the correct time. I've been with him for a long time. So, just listen to him. Everything's been great. You know, we're just kind of cruising into fight week now next week. He does all that stuff. I don't have really any part of that. He just, you know, calculates it all and I just have to listen. So like I said, everything's been great this camp.
Obviously, Valerie, a lot of people know who she is because of her time in the UFC. I think a lot of Bellator fans know who you are, but there's probably going to be people who are going to tune in on Friday night to watch you fight. What would you want those people to know about you that may be something that's not out there that you want fans to know about who you are, maybe just as a person and as a fighter?
You know, my family has a big part in where I am. Most people know my grandma. They saw her in my very first fight. Mm-hmm. We used to watch fights together when I was younger. And she kind of talked my mom into letting me sign up for martial arts as a kid, which rolled into a little bit of high school, a little bit of college wrestling, which is how I ended up in Oklahoma. And, you know, because I'm in Oklahoma, I found my gym, my coach, and that's what's kept me here. And I've met amazing people, my team, my coaches, all the people out here just have been amazing. And so, you know, it's really, my family is a big part of it. They got me started, they keep me going, and I'm just really excited. A lot of them are going to be there after this fight. So I'm just very excited that, you know, we're all part of it. And, you know, just very excited for that. They'll all be here next weekend, to watch.
Everyone knows there's pressure in fights, whether you're the favorite, you're underdog, whatnot. I think that most people on the outside looking in would say, hey, all the pressure's on Valerie here. She is the fighter coming in. Do you feel any pressure heading into this fight?
You know, fortunately, I don't really feel too much pressure in my fights. Usually I'm able to focus myself on, you know, a few things only. I don't really feel too much outside pressure. No, I don't really feel a lot of that. I would imagine Valerie would be, like you said, she's coming in, she's got more eyes on her, stuff like that. So, I'm, you know, not really feeling any pressure.
I know I've seen some recent interviews with you where you've talked about this feeling that everyone thinks that your path to victory is just to take the fight to the ground. Do you at all think that people underestimate your striking game?
I don't know if people have seen enough. You know, my fights, they've all been different. It's not like you've seen a whole lot of my striking, a whole lot of my wrestling, a whole lot of my ground. So maybe people just haven't seen enough of it yet to just not, feel like I'm comfortable. But like I said, this camp, I work on sharpening everything up. So I would like to show in this fight, you know, I can be anywhere. I want to show my stand up, my wrestling, and my ground. So like you saw, I do feel comfortable with everything. So I'm just excited. I don't have to get to the ground. And I think that's what a lot of people are expecting. Oh, three submissions. She's got to get to the ground. Valerie's a striker, blah, blah, blah. You know, Valerie's pretty well-rounded. And I'm not expecting a takedown in an easy fight on the ground at all. She's well-rounded. She's experienced. I'm going to test out, you know, get in there, see what we can do. But, yeah, I'll be comfortable standing and I'll be comfortable on the ground.
As you have prepared for this fight and you and your coach have sat down and looked at Valerie and what she does well, what to you really sticks out of something that, you know, maybe there's a certain combination she throws or some, is there something that you have seen that just said, wow, I have to avoid putting myself in this position?
We looked at her stuff, you know, in the beginning and, I had seen her fight before we even, you know, knew this fight was possible, because, you know, she is a big name and stuff like that. In my opinion, she's very technical, very tough, and very durable. I do think she's more comfortable standing. So, you know, her stand-up is good. So, I mean, it's not like we're, you know, scared or nervous or plan to avoid it. But, you know, I am aware of her stand-up abilities. So, you know, our training has prepared all of the possibilities of this fight. So, you
know, I think
going to get in there.
And I think a lot of people, they look at, because, you know, Bellator has not come out and said, you know, when they're going to do an inaugural 125-pound title fight, but they kind of look at this fight as, you know, it could be, you know, maybe the winner of this matchup is going to face Leigh McFarlane. Of course, you've already had the fight against McFarlane. Is that the way you're viewing this fight? Is essentially that this is a kind of like a title eliminator?
Not really. You know, I think Alima should fight for the title. They haven't announced too many details, but I would imagine she would fight somebody for the title, you know, later on this year. I think if Valerie won, they would probably put her, but I'm not sure. You know, I really have no idea. There's so many options now that they're putting so much effort into the division. They could really do a whole lot of things, but I think it should be Alima versus somebody. But in my mind, I'm not looking at this fight as a title contention or anything like that. I'm just looking, you know, just at Valerie. That's it.
As you have visualized how this fight goes down and how you get the victory, do you see the victory coming in a certain way, or is it one of those things that you have visualized this fight going down thousands of ways and the victory coming thousands of different ways?
Right. Yeah, when I think about this fight, you know, my style, I don't like to predict things or, you know, imagine, because, you know, MMA is full of possibilities. There have been some wild things that have happened. So I really can't say anything there, but I can say that, you know, it will be the best Gordinha you've seen. I've really worked to sharpen everything, and I'm really just excited to show my improvements.
And, of course, this is going to be the co-main event of Bellator 181 coming up on Friday night, July the 14th, live from the Windstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. Fans can watch this on Spike beginning at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Emily, I really appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can follow you at on social media.
I'm mostly on Instagram, but you can find me on Facebook. Instagram is mdakoti1, and like I said, I'm usually on there. But thank you so much for the time.
And I appreciate Emily Ducote coming on the podcast to talk about her fight coming up on Friday night. Very unfortunate situation for her. Scheduled to take on Valerie Letourneau, was going to be the biggest opportunity of her career. And unfortunately, Valerie had to pull out of the fight, but now she takes on Jessica Middleton. So maybe if Emily gets a win on Friday night, maybe they try to rebook that fight against Valerie Letourneau. But that will be one of the four fights that will be a part of the main card. Now, the preliminary card, which is an absolutely stacked preliminary card, multiple reasons to watch this preliminary card on Bellator.com or on the Bellator app. You can see the Bellator debut of Logan Storley. You've got Rafael Lovato Jr. you're going to hear from next, taking on Mike Rhodes. EJ Brooks, you're going to hear from a little bit, as he is going to be taking on Guillermo Vasilona. So many reasons to watch this preliminary card. I'm looking forward to watching this preliminary card on Friday night. But first up, going to let you hear from Rafael Lovato Jr. Of course, if you listened to the podcast last week, you heard my conversation with Mike Rhodes. One of the things that Mike said in that interview is that he did feel that maybe Rafael Lovato Jr. is underestimating him a little bit. So here is my interview with Rafael Lovato Jr. Just start it off by saying, how's it going, man?
Oh, it's going very, very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, one of the things that we hear in MMA, you know, when people talk about a wrestler, they'll say, you know, amateur wrestling is much different than MMA wrestling. Or for you, they'll say, you know, jiu-jitsu competition as opposed to using jiu-jitsu in MMA is just different. How is using jiu-jitsu in grappling different than using your jiu-jitsu in an MMA fight?
First off, I get to hit people while I'm on top of them. but no, I mean, there's, especially like with the gi, you know, there's such a vast universe of techniques and options, you know, so many details. It's way more of a chess game. You take the gi away, and things become a lot more, you know, slippery and based on speed and athleticism. There's a lot more wrestling involved. And then you throw in, you know, MMA and the gloves kind of have their own difficulties, as far as being able to slip in chokes and control someone, or have them control you, because it's an easier grip, you know, on the wrist when someone has gloves on. So there are those limitations. But on the other hand, you know, if you're in a position where maybe you can't finish somebody, or their submission's not there, you know, you can hit them. And so, you can create, a lot of opportunities to make the mistake, that leads to a submission. And I feel like the jiu-jitsu background that I have, works perfectly in the MMA world. And I've been exploring that now for the last few years. And, you know, I really feel like I have the perfect jiu-jitsu style for MMA.
And you're coming off that victory in your Bellator debut, 13 seconds. I remember we talked prior to that. Did you ever visualize that the fight ending could come that quick?
Oh, no. Not even close. You know, you train to go the distance. You're ready for war. You know, obviously, I've been working a lot of my stand-up, and I believed that I could connect on something good, but I had no idea it would be the very first thing that I threw. So, but I think, you know, it was a good experience in the fact that it showed me that I have, you know, developing skills where I can finish the fight in more than one way, and I'm hoping to have another great performance, you know, maybe not as quickly, but at least another finish this time around as well.
I saw on your Instagram, which, if by any way anyone's not following you, is at Lovato BJJ. Your father came into your training gym and taught a class. So what was that like for you? Just you watching your dad teach a class.
Just to clarify, my Instagram is Lovato Junior BJJ. But yes, my dad just recently, did like a little in-house seminar at my academy. We had a special class for him. You know, he's still on the mats all the time. He you know, he doesn't have like a class that he is on schedule to teach routinely. But every now and then we like to bring him in as like a special guest and let him teach. But he still comes around quite often to train with me and maybe jump in one of my classes or just, you know, train for fun. You know, he does private lessons a lot and still stays very active. So, but last week we held a special class for him. It was really awesome. I just got home from Brazil for my training camp, and it was great to, you know, fill the mat up and have my dad have that family energy. And of course he did an amazing class. And at the end of it, I was very happy to recognize him with his fourth degree on his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He's now been a black belt for over 14 years. And at that point you get, you know, you're eligible for your fourth degree. And so I talked to my instructors, Salo and Shanji Hubeto, and they sort of gave me the blessing to go ahead and do so myself because it was a special time. He was doing the class, and it's just some great energy for the whole team in the academy, you know, to carry in to these fights that are coming up.
Where did you train at in Brazil?
I was training at Evolução Thai in Curitiba. The head coach instructor there is Andre Dida. He's a former K-1 fighter. His lineage goes to Shootbox, and he's a black belt under Rafael Cordero. And he's created an amazing team down there in Curitiba. This was my sixth time to go, and this is my sixth fight coming up. You know, so I go every time I have an MMA fight. And his brother, Mauricio Veo, is here with me now. He's in my corner for all my fights, and he's helping me put the finishing touches on my camp here in Oklahoma.
How key has Kendall Grove been in your growth in MMA? I know he's been training with you. I mean, what are some of the things that you've really taken from him?
Man, well, Kendall's an awesome guy. He has incredible energy. You know, he's very positive. You know, and he's a true martial artist, you know, and that's something that's very important to me, you know, as, you know, I'm fighting MMA, but I'm really carrying sort of this martial arts philosophy and perspective into the cage. For me, it's not just about, you know, going in there and trying to beat people up or anything like that. I'm testing myself as a martial artist, and my whole life has been martial arts. And Kendall, you know, we really mesh well together. Our minds are kind of in that same place. And we go way back. We met each other for the first time in 2004, right after I received my black belt. I was out in Vegas spending a considerable amount of time training at Cobra Kai. I was helping Mark Lehman get ready for a big jiu-jitsu super fight at that time. And me and Lehman were pretty good friends. And Kendall was actually living with Mark Lehman. So I was therefore living with Kendall as well. And Kendall was just a blue belt at the time. And I was there, I was teaching at Cobra Kai, and I kind of made a pretty good, I built a good relationship with several of the guys there, way back in the day. And Kendall and I, you know, we've kept in touch a little bit over the years. We have similar, you know, like mutual friends, and I've seen his career, you know, blossom and watch him in Ultimate Fighter, UFC, and just fight all these top guys. And then once I got into MMA, you know, one of our really good friends, Jake Mapes, is like best friends with Kendall, and Jake was helping me for some of my training, and Jake couldn't come in to help me for my title fight, for Legacy. And we were talking, he was like, man, you should hit up Kendall and maybe Kendall will want to come. And so I hit up Kendall, and Kendall was like, yeah, man, I'm all in. And so he came out and helped me prepare for my Legacy title fight. And, you know, we just sort of picked right back up where we left off. And, you know, we really reconnected. And then, you know, since then, I signed with Bellator, and we ended up on the card together earlier this year. And he was out, you know, unfortunately, his fight fell through and he didn't end up fighting. But, you know, we were training together then. And then, you know, it just, same thing happened again, deja vu. He's back on the card here in Oklahoma, and there's no better way to, you know, finish off camp than with someone else that's, you know, like a brother, and, you know, we could kind of really be there for each other through the front stages and go in and do our thing.
And your opponent here, Mike Rhodes, obviously, I think a lot of people know who Mike is, you know, from his time in the UFC. I think a lot of people may or may not know the fact that he has gone 4-0 since exiting the UFC. So what's your thoughts on Mike as an opponent, and what are the challenges that Mike is going to offer you that maybe you've not had to face in your previous MMA fights?
I think Mike is going to be a great challenge. You know, he has the experience. He's been in there with some of the best already. You know, he's definitely hungry, losing those fights in the UFC. And then, you know, since moving up to middleweight, going 4-0, getting the victory title, you know, he's obviously on a roll and he's trying to make his mark and get back in the big show and work his way back up. So, you know, everything is in a good phase for him right now. As far as, you know, what he brings to the table, he's very skilled, in all areas. He's pretty complete. He has knockout victories. He has submission victories. He's shown good wrestling. He comes from a great camp. He's got the experience in the big show. So, I mean, he's, to me, I believe he's going to be my toughest test, thus far. You know, he's very technical. He's not wild. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. So, you know, once again, I'm ready for a complete war. I definitely believe that my skills on the ground can be the deciding factor in this fight.
I had a chance to talk to him, and I talked to him about the state of the middleweight division. Yeah, everyone who follows the Bellator product knows middleweight is the division that really everything's up in the air. Yes, you have the champion, Rafael Carvalho, but the path to the title was a very quick path. The fact that you won your Bellator debut in 13 seconds and now you have this matchup, where do you think a win puts you in the title picture?
I would say I'm still at least a one or two fights away. You know, Mike is a great name, but he's new to Bellator as well. So it's not like he's already knocked off, you know, two or three of the top guys. And he's right there waiting for a title shot as well. And so, you know, beating him, I believe is a great statement, you know, to show everybody, hey, I'm ready for one of the top guys. And I hope, you know, not looking past Mike at all, but I hope to have a great performance against him and then get a big fight with one of the main guys in the middleweight division afterwards. And then after that, hopefully I'll be right there. You know, if not, I'm just going to keep climbing my way up until I am there.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to watch your fight against Mike Rhodes, part of the preliminary card of Bellator 181, come on Friday night, July the 14th, live from the Windstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. Their fight will be a part of the preliminary card you can watch on Bellator.com or on the Bellator app. Rafael, I appreciate time, and let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Sure, thank you. So my Instagram, one more time, is Lovato, LovatoJRBJJ. And that's also my Twitter, and they can find my page on Facebook at facebook.com/LovatoJrBJJ. Very same thing. So thank you all for the support, and talk to you again soon.
And that was my conversation with Rafael Lovato Jr., who takes on Mike Rhodes, a part of the preliminary card of Bellator 181. Really looking forward to that matchup. Looking forward to seeing what Rafael Lovato Jr., as he takes a step up in competition. And Mike Rhodes, which, you know, Mike last week on the podcast mentioned this, the fact that I think a lot of people maybe don't realize that he has won four in a row since exiting the UFC. A great signing by Bellator, bringing in Mike Rhodes, and a very good matchup there, a part of the preliminary card of Bellator 181. Another solid matchup on this preliminary card will be the welterweight matchup between EJ Brooks and Guilherme Vasilonis. And I did have a chance to catch up with EJ Brooks. Now, this matchup was just announced on Monday night of this week, and I started off my interview with EJ Brooks asking him exactly how long he has known about this matchup.
They originally told me I wasn't allowed to announce who I was fighting when I took the fight, and I took the fight about 3 weeks ago. But I guess they wanted to make the announcement, so I was allowed to say I was fighting on the card, but I wasn't allowed to say who. Not to mention, I can't even say the guy's name. So whatever his name is, I mean, however you say it. But I guess I've been preparing for about 3.5 weeks.
The only reason I know how to say his first name, because that's my father-in-law's first name. So that's the only reason I know how to pronounce it.
Oh, yeah. It was one of those weird ones. Everybody kept asking, like, who you fight? And I'm like, I can't even say his name, like, literally and figuratively.
You know, but Guilherme is a guy that, you know, some people may remember him from the one fight he had in the UFC. He's coming to Bellator, and he's put on a nice little win streak here, won back-to-back fights, both of those stoppage victories. And when I think of him, I think of striking. Is that what jumps out to you?
Not really. I mean, I've seen him fight. Obviously, I have to do my studying. I just see a gamer. I see a guy that goes in there and he fights. I don't necessarily look at him as a striker or a grappler or anything. I just see him as a dude who comes prepared to fight, you know, everywhere. I don't think he necessarily has any weaknesses anywhere or any strong points, really, to be honest.
What do you think he does the best?
I would say compete. I heard he's a black belt. I mean, obviously I've seen he's knocked people out. His striking looks pretty decent. His grappling looks pretty decent. I just think he goes out there and gets the job done. You know, like nothing, I'm trying to be respectful, but like there's nothing about him that I'm like, oh, wow, he does this very, very well. I just see that he goes out there, he gets his hand raised, and he handles his competition accordingly.
Now he's going to have a little bit of a height advantage on you here. So what's the advantages and disadvantages of that?
The advantages of his height. I've fought taller guys, you know. The dude's what, 6 foot? Six one. I mean, I fought guys 6'4", 6'3", you know. I mean, you look up a guy like Johnny Case, who I fought in RFA and got screwed against. I mean, he's like 6'2". Jason Novelli, I think he's 6'4". You know, I've dealt with taller guys, trained with taller guys. I guess with the striking, I guess his height, he'll have the length advantage, but I'm faster. I'm probably more powerful than he is. I mean, he's a welterweight, but he's not a very big welterweight. I think he's the average size welterweight. So I don't expect him to have a power advantage, you know. I really don't see him having any advantages in this fight, to be honest.
Now, of course, I've seen you been out in Colorado, so it's pretty much a majority of your camp been in Colorado for the preparations for this?
Yeah, I got the call for this fight literally a week after I was in Colorado, and I was there for about a month. So, yeah, I spent most of my training up in Denver, training with Team Wildman, with Thomas Wildman and Denny. So, it was a good change of scenery. I needed.
Why do you think you needed the change of scenery?
I'm a pretty popular guy here in St. Louis. Nightlife is very active for me. I have a lot of distractions, you know, friends, family. So whenever I get out of town and I'm training, that's all cut out, and the only thing I can do is train. And it's so good for me. I mean, it's easy for me to say, oh, I'm going to stay in, I'm going to ignore people. But when it's right here in my face, it's easier said than done. You know what I'm saying?
I've noticed that on Instagram that, Friday and Saturday nights, there more times than not, there is a selfie of you going out with the boys.
Yeah, and, you know, even if I'm not drinking, that's the thing. Like, I'll be out, and most of the time I'm not drinking on the DD, but that's some time I could be resting, you know, not staying up late eating whatever after I leave the bar or the club with my boys. You know, just so many things that add up to just bad behavior while you're trying to live the fighter life. You know, and it's, believe it or not, you know, I could easily be like, you know what, I'm staying Friday night, and then I've got somebody that might text me and say, hey, I want to come over and keep me up all night. You know, that's not necessarily the case when I'm out of town. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, just saying it's not necessarily the case.
And for longtime fans of Bellator, they'll remember, you know, this is not your first time in Bellator. Back 2012, last time we saw you in the Bellator cage. So is this a one fight deal to kind of see, you know, if there's a long term future for you in Bellator with this fight?
It is a one fight deal, and it's definitely going to open up some doors to wherever I want to go. Like, somebody's going to give me something big after I win this fight.
Because I remember the last time we talked, you mentioned, like, the 155 days were over. You weren't going to put your body through that. I mean, do you still kind of view this as EJ version 2.0, or are we well past 2.0?
Well, I would say, yes, it's past EJ 2.0, but I do plan on going back to 55. And to touch on what you said about me saying I won't put my body through that, it goes back to me being more disciplined, not partying as much, taking my training more seriously, and not putting myself through bad weight cuts. The reason why I was always putting myself through bad weight cuts for 55 was after I left Bellator, I was always taking fights on short notice. So I really wasn't training well. I was partying, you know, walking around kind of heavy. Then all of a sudden, I get 2 weeks or 3 weeks notice fight to make 55.
I would either make weight barely and fight like crap, or I would miss weight and still fight like crap, you know, because of my weight cut. So I told myself, until I got back on track, if I'm taking short notice fights, I might as well take them at 70 so the weight cut isn't killing me. Because even these last two wins that I have, I'm on a two-fight winning streak, those were short notice fights. Those were fights where I was brought in to lose. I didn't have much time to prepare. And I took them at 70 so that I wouldn't have the disadvantage of depleting myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm already not in shape to fight. So I need to come in with as much energy as possible, not going to kill myself making weight. So I fought at 70 and I was able to perform, you know, and I beat two really good guys. And by the grace of God, I was lucky. I was training. I've been training since my last fight. I was in Denver, Colorado training regardless because my manager told me he was possibly going to have me a fight in July. We got the call from Bellator. I was already on schedule training. So, you know, I'm close to weight right now. You know, I could probably make 155 right now if I wanted to, you know, so that's where I'm at, you know.
So are we talking about the next fight will be at 155?
The next fight can be at 155, but, I mean, if it's at 70, it's at 70. I don't want to make 155 unless it's for Bellator or UFC,
uh-huh.
Bottom line. Like, unless it's for big money to where I can just focus all my training on a huge fight. But if it's not a huge fight, there's no point in me making a cut to 55. It's got to, you know, it's got to be worth it. It's got to be worth a big-time contract. But like I said, the plan is to go down to 55. I'm not a welterweight. I'm 5'9 at my best. You know, that's what I say at the bar. And I'm not that tall. I got the wrestling to compete with most guys at welterweight, but I'm not a welterweight, you know.
And of course,
and I know that.
And of course, this fight's going to be part of the preliminary card. I will tell you this. I have been to Thackerville, Oklahoma. You don't got to worry about any nightlife when you get there this week.
Bro, I know. They've told me. Like, the Bellator people know me. They remember me. And that was one of the first things they told me. They was just like, because I made a joke about Demi Lovato hoping she was going to be there. Because obviously that's this dude's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they was like, oh, you ain't got to worry about that. There'll be plenty of people to choose from in Thackerville. And I'm all about it.
It's a casino. That's it. That's all that's there.
Hey, all I need is a place and opportunity.
That's true. You do need a place and an opportunity. And this is a big card there. But yeah, I'll tell you, I remember the first time I went there, I go down and I'm like, hey, is there like a CVS or a Walgreens anywhere around here? Like, yeah, drive about 30 minutes. I'm like, Jesus. But yeah, I
mean,
the casino's your only option.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
But, you know, where does this rank in terms of the biggest fights of your career? I mean, is this up there?
Well, just where I'm at in my career, it is. I feel like after my last loss, every fight is the biggest fight of my career because it's like if I lose, I should retire, kind of, because it's like, you know, I start 7-0, and then I keep getting, like, all these setup fights and getting screwed and blah, blah, and, you know, I'm 31, not saying that that's old, but I'm not a young prospect anymore. So it's just like, you know, how long do I want to keep doing this? I love fighting. I love competing. But if it's not working out, like, why am I doing it? You know, I got a lot of people that follow me. You know, it's up there just because I know this is the fight that gets me my big contract with whoever it is, whether it's Bellator, UFC. Like, this is the fight that gets it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my last fight was a stepping stone. I think my fight before this with Dakota Cochran was a bigger fight. You know, I think Dakota was a tougher opponent. You know, I think he was a better fighter, tougher opponent. It was a bigger fight on so many levels. I could not lose that fight. I might have committed suicide if I had lost that fight for a number of reasons. But, I mean, that's a joke. I really wasn't going to commit suicide. I'm just saying. But, yeah, I mean, it's just up there because I know what this means to my career. It's it's one of those things where, I mean, I contemplate, like, will I continue fighting if I lose, which I don't think I will, but I know winning this fight leads to something really, really big and mm-hmm. the official rebirth of my new career.
And, of course, all the fans are going to be able to watch this on Bellator.com on Friday night, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central Time. Of course, the main card starts at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Spike. EJ, as always, man, I appreciate time. And let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
On social media, you can follow me at Pretty Boy EJ Brooks MMA on Facebook. I think that's my fan page. And EJizzle149 on Instagram and Twitter. That's EJIZZLE149. Yeah, look me up. Follow your boy. I'm entertaining.
And there you have my conversation with EJ Brooks. Really appreciate EJ coming on the podcast. Talk about his fight coming up on Friday night, Bellator 181. Myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast coming up on Friday. We're going to preview Bellator 181, and we will also preview UFC Fight Night 113, which goes down on Sunday afternoon here in the United States over from Scotland. Really looking forward to that Bellator card. I will say I'm more interested in that in the Bellator card than I am the UFC fight card. There's a, you know, obviously, as I mentioned, you know, the matchup, which is a catchweight matchup between Brandon Gertz and Derek Campos, a big matchup there at 100 and, you know, in the lightweight division. The co-main event between Kendall Grove and John Salter, big matchup there in the middleweight division. You know, we'll see kind of at middleweight, you know, what happens with Gegard Mousasi. Does he get an immediate title shot? Do they still go the Sakara route? But John Salter is definitely has got a case there for a title matchup. Also, you got the women's flyweight matchup between Emily Ducote, Jessica Middleton, and the bantamweight matchup, Steve Garcia and Joe Warren, all big matchups there. And we look at that preliminary card of reasons to watch that preliminary card. Romero Cotton, who's going to be making his MMA debut, taking on Aaron Rodriguez. That's a matchup. You know, Rhodes and Lovato, which we've talked about. Tristan Thompson, Justin Lawrence. Thompson is a guy that has been a staple of the preliminary cards when Bellator has gone to Thackerville, taking on Justin Lawrence. Of course, everyone knows about him. Also, some other notable matchups. AJ Matthews versus Andre Filho. AJ returning to 170 pounds, which I thought he was not going to go back to. But, you know, just based on some conversation interviews I had with him, I thought his days at 170 were over, but returns here, and we'll see how Andre Filho can bounce back. Also, you got Amanda Bell against Brittany Elkin. Elkin stepping up on short notice to take the place of Alexis Dufresne. Also, you've got the Bellator debut of Logan Storley, 5-0 in his career. Of course, one of the main training partners there for Michael Chandler, so looking forward to that matchup. And of course, when you look at that fight card on Sunday, UFC Fight Night 113, you know, you do have obviously interest in the main event there between Gunnar Nelson and Santiago Ponza Nibilo. Joanne Calderwood against Cynthia Calvillo. I mean, it's just, to me, that's a weird matchup. Just because, you know, everyone knows Joanne's going to go up to 125 pounds. So you really don't understand that matchup too much there. But myself and Daniel Galvan, we're going to have a full preview of both those fight cards coming up on Friday. So be sure to check that out. Now, coming up on next Tuesday, the second episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Of course, the beginning of the podcast, I did do a recap of the inaugural episode, but on episode number two, there's going to be a flyweight matchup on this fight card as CJ Hamilton, who comes out of Valor Fights, was their champion there at 125 pounds. He's going to be taking on our next guest, Casey Kenny. Now, of course, we've had Casey on the podcast before his last fight at LFA, which ended up being a split draw. And start off my conversation with him saying, you know, hey, after you went back and watched the fight, do you understand at all why the scores ended up coming out the way they did?
Well, actually, when I went back and watched the fight, I thought it was even more on my side. That made it. Actually, the funny thing was the first time and the only time I've been able to watch it on Access TV is right after the fight at a Tilted Kilt, and Bruno and his crew actually happened to be at the table next to us, and it was pretty fun just to watch the whole thing go down again. And then I went over and talked to him afterwards, and let's just say they weren't as confident that they had won the fight, you know, the second time. Oh, there we go.
But, you know, how do you when, you know, and I mean, look, it's the old fighting cliche. You don't leave it in the hands of judges. You mentioned that after the fact. But how do you not let that get you down at all when you get back into the training room?
Oh, man, you know, in this sport, you know, if something like a little draw is going to what gets you down, you know, you're in the wrong sport. So, I just honestly that night I was like, you know what, I performed pretty well. I didn't think it was my best performance, but, you know, I thought I did pretty well. I found a lot of good things that I did, but I also found a lot of stuff that I could learn from. So it was out the window, and I was like, on to the next one. You know, I'm going to go finish this guy and really let everybody know who I am.
And I saw that on your Instagram, you know, page. You had said, hey, lessons learned. What was the biggest lesson you learned in that fight?
You know, when you got somebody hurt, don't give them even a second to breathe. You know, I think that's where I messed up. I hurt Bruno in the third, and I had my little flurry, and then I kind of let him breathe for a second, and that was probably where I messed up. You know, there's a lot of things that I could have done, but, you know, just that particular point where I had him hurt, I should have just, you know, mauled him.
But now you get this opportunity, a tremendous opportunity for yourself. I think one way I've heard people describe this is it's basically a job interview, essentially, that you're fighting right in front of all the major players in the UFC. Yes, you're not in the UFC. This is not a UFC fight. It's a totally different promotion. But is the way you look at this is kind of like a job interview where you're fighting right in front of these people and you can show them why you should be in the UFC?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's exactly what I think I was talking about the other day with somebody. It's basically like an audition or a job interview, you know. No crowd, just go out, fight, and, you know, here's what it is. And, I mean, what fighter outside the UFC doesn't want to fight right in front of Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, and Dana White?
And But I did see your preparations for this matchup. You did a little cross-training there at the MMA Lab. You know, what kind of led to that and deciding to do a little work with that team?
You know, it's something that I had done in the past, just here and there. I'd been up there a handful of times. You know, my coach Chris used to go up and spar up there with, like, Moraga and all those guys when he was in camp. And, you know, it was just kind of time, the way, you know, everybody's on the kind of like the fight cycle here at my own gym. Got some great training partners. It was just it's time to go get some different looks and a bunch of high-level guys trying to kick my ass, so.
Any big things you take out of being in that gym and seeing how they work as opposed to maybe some of the stuff that you guys do in your own gym?
You know, just, man, they go hard, right? They're going hard nonstop, you know, whether they're sparring, training, you know, the end conditioning, whatever it may be. And, just, you know, I got a good group of guys I train with, but having, you know, 30, 40 guys deep in a sparring session, all on the, you know, almost the same level, the same page, that was something that was pretty cool.
Is the mindset at all different heading into this fight as opposed to any other fight just because of the stage it's on?
No, man, you know, once they close that octagon door, it's still a fight in a cage with me and another person. And, you know, I do a good job of kind of closing out everything around me. So it's almost like I'm fighting in the gym with my coach when I'm fighting in a big arena too. So, you know, I don't see it any different. The way I'm just going to go out and do what I normally do. And then, you know, when the fight's said and done, I can look over and be like, you know, oh, there's Dana White. That was a good guy to do that in front of.
It's obviously it's a great opportunity. You got a tough opponent here in CJ Hamilton. He's a Valor Fights champion. And my understanding is Valor's had really a tough time trying to get him fights to where people just don't want to fight him. I'm sure you've been in the same type of situation where guys don't want to fight you. As you have prepared for this fight, why do you think people maybe don't want to step into the cage with CJ?
I mean, he's a tough wrestler with, you know, some decent strikes. It makes sense. You know, if you get out wrestled in a fight, especially here as a little guy, you're going to be in trouble. But I don't plan on any of that happening July 18th. You know, I'm pretty confident in my grappling skills, and we'll kind of see how the striking battle goes.
I think one of the interesting things about being on this program is the fact of you're essentially an open gym. And, you know, this is obviously a situation you don't necessarily deal with. Jamie Pickett, who's on the first episode, he talked to me. He goes, he feels like it's almost going kind of like a sparring matchup because of you're going to be able to hear everything from your coaches and things along those lines. Do you kind of, how do you prepare for that? I mean, because it is a very unique scene that you're going to be in.
You know, I think I started watching The Ultimate Fighter in like high school. So, I've seen that. I've never personally been there, but I've seen that gym. I've seen that atmosphere so many times. I feel like I can see it in my head already. You know, I don't think it's going to be any different. You know, it's almost like going to another person's gym. You know, going to like the MMA lab to spar with those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot of big crowd. There's a couple coaches yelling here and there. You're fighting a high level guy. And, you know, so I don't see it being a problem. You know, it's something that, you know, I have done before. I went to another gym. I've sparred. It's going to be a fight this time, though. You know, definitely no sparring, but I think I'll settle right into it.
Do you ever your wildest imaginations think that Snoop Dogg will be calling your fight?
Dude, that is what I don't know if I'm more pumped about a Snoop Dogg commentating my fight or actually fighting myself. So I'm curious to hear that one. I hope I put on some good stuff for, you know, Snoop to commentate to.
Yeah, I'm very interested just to hear what his commentary is like there. But as you have visualized this fight going down, do you see the victory, the path to victory coming a certain way?
You know, I'm always looking for the finish, you know, from the time the fight starts to the time the fight ends. Any way I can finish CJ Hamilton will be good in my boat. You know, I got tools that I can finish him on my feet, from the clinch, on the mat, doesn't matter. Just looking for the finish the whole time.
You know, and of course, this fight being in Las Vegas, have you ever been to Las Vegas before? Are you going to try to take in the scenes after the fight is over? I mean, have you ever been there?
Yeah, I've been to Vegas a few times. Even in the fight world, actually, I fought, my last amateur fight was in Vegas for Tough Enough. See, I said ringside when Chris fought Demetrius in Vegas there at the MGM. And so I got a little experience there. And then I've been just a handful of time for like jiu-jitsu tournaments and stuff. You know, we're only like a 6-hour drive from Tucson. So, you know, I've been to Vegas a handful of times. I've done it all. You know, I've seen the nightlife, the regular life, and kind of everything like that. So, I'm just worried about the fight. You know, I'll do Vegas another time on a weekend when I'm headlining a pay-per-view or something.
I remember the first time I went to Vegas, and I tell people this all the time. If you really want to experience Vegas, go out on the strip about 7 o'clock in the morning. I was out doing a little cardio session, and it was an interesting experience. Let's just say that. It's kind of to see the people walking around. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. The city never sleeps. I've been one of those people 6-7 in the morning.
I think we all have.
Trying to figure out where the hotel's at, you know, the whole nine yards.
I think everyone has been at that point at some point in their life. But
I mean, what are you doing in Vegas if you haven't experienced it at least once?
Exactly, right? Exactly. But of course, this fight coming up here on July 18th, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series live on UFC Fight Pass. The fights begin 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Casey, as always, I appreciate time, and let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate having me on the show and everything. Always a great time. You can follow me on social media, Instagram and Twitter at CKMMA125, and also at Casey.Kenny.1 on Facebook or Casey Kenny on Facebook.
And there you have my conversation with Casey Kenny. I really appreciate him giving some time out to talk about his fight coming up on Tuesday of next week on the second episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. It's going to be interesting to see how this Contender Series does develop. It's going to run through the end of August. And, you know, you imagine if this ends up going really well, that this is going to be a staple for the UFC. And it's going to be a great way for the UFC to go out there and find talent. And I think also find, you know, that talent that they think is UFC level to kind of give them maybe a little more up close look at those fighters and see if they are fighters that they ultimately want to bring in into the UFC. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. I really appreciate you taking time out to listen to the podcast. I want to thank all my guests for coming on this podcast, Derek Campos, Joe Warren, Emily Ducote, Rafael Lovato Jr., EJ Brooks, and Casey Kenney. Of course, all those interviews will be up on the MMAReport.com as well and on the MMA Report YouTube channel. The interview I did do with Casey Kenney was done via video, so you can check out the video interview of my conversation with Casey Kenney. And, of course, if you're not subscribing to the MMA Report on YouTube, really would appreciate if you do that. Of course, make sure you're subscribing to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. All you gotta do is search the MMA Report. I will be back on Friday as I'll be joined by Daniel Dumont to preview Bellator 181 and UFC Fight Night 113.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You know, a lot of people are marked for different things. And when I say the word mark, it's not an insult. There's wrestling marks and there's, you know, boy band marks. And, you know, they come from. I'm a mark for Tyrus now because every Saturday night he gets to sit next to Greg Gutfeld on his new chair that he bought him and talk the world of politics and get paid for it. So instead of telling the wrestling fans how you got in the business and all the stuff that we usually talk about, how did you love to tell the story of how you got to be a Fox News contributor?
Okay, well, I guess we start from the beginning. Most of my stuff started in the locker room. I've been talking trash and running my mouth and giving my opinion in locker rooms starting from football and wrestling. And my time with Dusty Rhodes, he always said the same thing. A match is a promo is a match. And he's like, you can wrestle 100 times, but you talk like nobody I've seen. So when I got to wrestling was starting to, I went through when I left the WWE and I was starting here at Impact and I was looking for other ventures to get into. Greg Gutfeld, I looked at CNN, I looked at MMMCC, you know, and then.
So you actually thought about trying to get a job in the news?
Trying to get on a talk show and, you know, because it's just basically talking trash. And if you're a little educated, which I am, and you can research stuff, and I think, you know, everyone has an opinion. So I was watching the Gutfeld show and he cracked a joke or something and I put it on Twitter. I was like, that was clever. I got it. And then he hit me right back. And I was like,
he never
all right.
hits me right back.
And then he sent me a message. He basically said like, hey man, I'm a big fan of your stuff. And would you ever consider coming on the show as a guest? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And he's like, oh, that'd be great. And then he asked, you know, we talked about like my affiliation. I said, well, man, I really don't have one. I'm more of a conservative independent, but I'm not like fakey with it. I just don't want the government in my stuff and everyone to take care of their own selves. So he was great.
Okay. If I remember correctly, it was right around the time that the whole Black Lives Matter happened and there were some shootings. And you had written something on social media about that, correct?
Yeah, because, well, here's the thing I was trying to put upon was like the mainstream media always pushes that racial narrative. And it's so frustrating because whenever someone's shot by the police, when it's not a brother getting shot, their racial identity is never mentioned. It's always the first thing because it's a hot button issue and it draws ratings. And I had said that and Greg thought that was an excellent point. And then he asked me to come on the show and I was like, great, sure. So I got my first shot on the show and it was all lightheaded. We cracked some jokes. I think I made fun of Aurora Grande, whatever her name is. She did the donut thing. And he's like, hey man, if you lived in New York, I'd make you my co-host. I was like, shut up, get out of here. And then I left, we shook hands, and then like next week his producer called me, goes, hey, would you be willing to come a couple months? You know, and I was like, yeah, great. And about 2 months of being on the show, there were some rumblings like, hey, you need to make you a Fox News contributor. But I didn't take it seriously, and I just thought it was great, a chance to be on TV, a chance to be able to show people. And at the time, the character I was playing, Impact, I wasn't speaking at all. Like, and that was by choice because I was trying to change my image from when I was the Funkasaurus. So, and then in Gutfeld, I got a chance to be myself a little bit. And then right around, there was some rumblings. I didn't think anything of it. And from what I understood, that usually they won't talk to you for at least a year before they offer you a contributorship. And I was literally 4 months when I got offered a contributorship. So I was one of the fastest Fox News contributors. And then the show's just grown.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.